The Orb, Volume 2, Number 5. Cruelty. Hello, welcome to The Orb. My name is Reed Hart. Last time in The Orb, I spoke about responsibility. Taking responsibility for actions and encouraging the same in organizations is a good thing. Now, I'm a bit of a political junkie, and I've watched a few debates on television. There are a couple of things from the past series of Republican primaries that are worth a much closer look. I'd like to start with an exchange between Wolf Blitzer and Ron Paul that drew considerable attention.
You're a physician, Ron Paul, so you're a doctor. You know something about this subject. Let me ask you this hypothetical question. A healthy 30-year-old young man has a good job, makes a good living, but decides, you know what? I'm not going to spend $200 or $300 a month for health insurance because I'm healthy. I don't need it. But, you know, something terrible happens. All of a sudden, he needs it. Who's going to pay for if he goes into a coma, for example? Who pays for that?
In a society that you accept welfareism and socialism, he expects the government to take care of him.
What do you want?
But what he should do is whatever he wants to do and assume responsibility for himself. My advice to him would have a major medical policy, but not before.
But he doesn't have that. He doesn't have it, and he needs intensive care for 6 months. Who pays?
That's what freedom is all about, taking your own risk. This whole idea that you have to prepare and take care of everybody.
But, Congressman, are you saying the society should just let him die?
No. I practiced medicine before we had Medicaid in the early 1960s when I got out of medical school. I practiced at Santa Rosa Hospital in San Antonio, and the churches took care of him. We never turned anybody away from the hospital, and we've given up on this whole concept that we might take care of ourselves and assume responsibility for ourselves, our neighbors, our friends, our churches would do it. This whole idea, that's the reason the cost is so high.
Now, there are a few things to talk about here. Ron Paul initially states the case for personal responsibility, and that draws applause from the audience. Take your risk, take responsibility for yourself. Now, I'm not entirely on board with it here, but I can understand the people that are. I personally think, as members of a society, that we have an interest in each other's welfare, but I'm willing to let go. Where I have more objection is to the cruelty of the audience that calls for the hypothetical guy to die. The ones calling out, yeah, when Wolf Blitzer asks,
Are you saying the society should just let him die?
No. Yeah.
That part is much more disturbing. I'll come back to it in a moment. I would like to take an aside to note that Ron Paul went on to say that the government should stand back and let churches do the paying. When he practiced at Santa Rosa Hospital, they never turned anyone away. The church picked it up. I find myself having to ask why society puts the burden on people of faith rather than sharing the burden across all of society through our government. But I digress. Let's get back on the theme of cruelty, and the cruelty of those in the audience that think people should be allowed to die for their choices. Jonathan Schell wrote, "Cruelty is a close cousin to injustice, yet it is different. Injustice and its opposite, justice, perhaps the most commonly used standards for judging the health of the body politic, are political criteria par excellence, and apply, above all, to systems and their institutions. Cruelty and its opposites, kindness, compassion, and decency, are more personal. They are apolitical qualities that nevertheless have political consequences. A country's sense of decency stands outside and above its politics, checking and setting limits on abuses. An unjust society must reform its laws and institutions. A cruel society must reform itself." Consider this exchange between Brian Williams and Governor Rick Perry of Texas.
A question about Texas. Your state has executed 234 death row inmates, more than any other governor in modern times. Have you Have you struggled to sleep at night with the idea that any one of those might have been innocent?
No, sir, I've never struggled with that at all. The state of Texas has a very thoughtful, a very clear process in place of which when someone commits the most heinous of crimes against our citizens, they get a fair hearing, they go through an appellate process, they go up to the Supreme Court of the United States if that's required. But in the state of Texas, if you come into our state and you kill one of our children, you kill a police officer, you are involved with another crime and you kill one of our citizens, you will face the ultimate justice in the state of Texas, and that is you will be executed.
What do you make of what do you make of that dynamic just happened here? The mention of the execution of 234 people drew applause.
I think Americans understand justice. I think Americans are clearly, in the vast majority of cases, supportive of capital punishment.
Again, there is substantive applause for the execution of people. Perry considers this indicative of the will of the American people. Now, personally, I oppose the death penalty because it is final, and people, our systems, do make mistakes. If we imprison someone mistakenly, we can at least let them go. That option disappears when you execute someone. The death penalty takes away more than the life of its victim. Are people who support the death penalty cruel? Certainly, they believe in the sentence of the courts. They believe that the person being put to death actually did the deed. If I had their conviction that our judicial system was faultless, I would likely not oppose the death penalty. But there is something deeper here. Consider this sample from a stand-up act by Texas comedian Ron White, and most importantly, the audience responses.
He's sentenced to death by a jury of his peers, and right before it comes time to carry out the sentence, a group of people on his behalf, stand up and they go, "We can't kill him. He's too crazy to know we're killing him." And what the hell are we arguing about? If he don't know the difference, and it makes me feel better.
And there's more.
They're trying to pass a bill right now through the Texas legislature that'll speed up the process of execution in heinous crimes where there's more than three credible eyewitnesses. If more than three people saw you do what you did, you don't sit on death row for 15 years, Jack. You go straight to the front of the line. Other states are... Other states are trying to abolish the death penalty. My state's putting in an express lane.
These people are applauding and cheering the deaths of others. They do it because they are convinced that the judicial system is without fault. Yet we know how weak eyewitness testimony is. A mass movement, not only in the United States, but in countries around the world, arose to oppose, unsuccessfully, the execution in Georgia of Troy Davis, whose conviction for murder 22 years ago had been thrown into doubt by new evidence, including the recantation of 7 of 9 witnesses. A petition signed by more than 600,000 people was presented to the Georgia Parole Board, which let the execution go forward. There must be something more than people being duped into a belief in the infallibility of the system. There must be cruelty in this.
Now you masters of war, you that build all the guns, you that build the death planes, you that build the big bombs, you that hide behind walls, you that hide behind desks, I just want you to know I can see through your mask. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand, you hide from my eyes. Then you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won. You want me to believe, but I see through your eyes, and I see through your brain, like I see through the water that runs down my drain. You fasten their triggers for others to fire, and you sit back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion as young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. You've thrown the worst fear that can never be hurled, the fear to bring children into the world, or threaten my baby, unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. How much do I know to talk out of turn? You might say that I'm young, you might say I'm unlearned. There's one thing I know, though I'm younger than even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find, when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul.
Where is it all coming from? Jonathan Schell holds that cruelty stems from a steadily growing faith in force as the solution to almost any problem, whether at home or abroad. Enthusiasm for killing is an unmistakable symptom of cruelty. It also appeared after the killing of Osama bin Laden, which touched off raucous celebrations around the country. It is one thing to believe in the unfortunate necessity of killing someone, another to revel in it. This is especially disturbing when it is not only government officials, but ordinary people who engage in the effusions. He argues that it comes in two stages. First, a behavior is tried, tested as it were. Consider the Bush administration's application of torture in his war on terror. Second comes the reaction. You either get indignation and rejection, or else you get silent acceptance. Nothing to see here. Go on about your shopping. Here, buy my book in which I write about the effectiveness of enhanced interrogation techniques. Even Obama has decided against imposing any legal accountability.
I don't believe that anybody is above the law. On the other hand, I also have a belief that we need to look forward as opposed to looking backwards.
Someone exercises a cruelty and waits for society to accept or reject it. People often view government bureaucracy as institutionalized cruelty. The people working the bureaucracy are not individually cruel. They have been coerced into following the policy of the department and do the best they can. Government budgeting is a process of shaping society into a more or less cruel, more or less compassionate form. Currently, in both Canada and the US, the governments of the right are pushing for cruelty. In the U.S., there are policies to hold back disaster relief until some budget offset is found in another part of government, opposing unemployment benefit extensions, working to constrain access to women's health care, and generally fighting to step back from what general health care they have. In Canada, we are passing draconian crime and punishment legislation that even Texas has warned us not to do. Budget decisions do not involve the death penalty, yet for many, they are matters of life and death. Jonathan Schell concluded his piece with this: "The cruelty of a society cannot be quantified any more than its reserves of decency can, nor can either be legislated, though both can be manifested in legislation. For all that, there can be no doubt that basic decisions are silently made in the hearts and minds of millions that are prior to any laws, and probably more important. If they go one way, a movement of hundreds of thousands suddenly arises, seemingly out of nowhere, to protest a wrongful execution. When they go the other way, you wake up one day to hear, with a chill running down your spine, a room full of people cheering because several hundred of their fellow citizens have been killed. Basic decisions are silently made in the hearts and minds of millions that are prior to any laws. It is us, the people, that decide to be cruel or kind. Where is that decision coming from?" I am reminded of a favorite scene from one of the really great motion pictures, Lawrence of Arabia. Lawrence has returned from his first expedition with the Arabs and is reporting the capture of Aqaba. When he meets the new British commander, Allenby, he makes this confession:
"I killed two people. I mean, two Arabs. One was a boy. That was yesterday. I led him into a quicksand. The other was a man. That was before Aqaba, anyway. I had to execute him with my pistol. There was something about it I didn't like."
"Well, naturally."
"No, something else."
"I see. Well, that's all right. Let it be a warning."
"No, something else."
"What then?"
"I enjoyed it."
Lawrence represents a rare person that can recognize his own capacity for cruelty. He can be extravagantly compassionate, returning to the Nafud to retrieve Ghassim, only to find that he must later execute him. What Lawrence finds throughout the film is that he has power. He eventually becomes intoxicated with it.
"The best of them won't come for money. They'll come for me."
Really, the point is that cruelty flows from power. Only those with power over another can be cruel. Whether that cruelty is to those we don't know, as in cruel and unusual punishment in prisons, or to those we do know, as in emotional and physical cruelty in marriage, or for the very weakest of us, cruelty to animals. Where does our social cruelty come from? It comes from people who feel powerless. As they feel less and less power over their government, they sink into any exercise of power still available to them. And we can all be cruel. It's a simple choice we make when we interact with others. We often imagine our cruelty to be something else, whether we are just following the policy in the government bureaucracy or striking a disobedient child. We're right, they deserved it. The victims, too, may not see the cruelty. They may look to themselves: "If only I'd been quicker to do what he asked."
I live upstairs from you. Yes, I think you've seen me before. If you hear something late at night, some kind of trouble, some kind of fight, just don't ask me what it was. Just don't ask me what it was. Just don't ask me what it was. I think it's 'cause I'm clumsy. I try not to talk too loud. Maybe it's because I'm crazy. I try not to act too proud. Only hit till you cry. After that, you don't ask why. You just don't argue anymore. Just don't argue anymore. Just don't argue anymore. Walked into the door again. If you ask, that's what I'll say. And it's not your business anyway. I guess I'd like to be alone. Nothing broken, nothing thrown. Just don't ask me how I am. Just don't ask me. Second floor, I live upstairs from you. Yes, I think you've seen me before. If you hear something late at night, some kind of trouble, some kind of fight, just don't ask me what it was. Just don't ask me.
Cruelty is a choice, a personal choice. We can choose to be kind, to be compassionate, to be decent. It isn't usually the easy choice. During the Vietnam War, I recall hearing soldiers say that it was so much easier to kill a wounded civilian than it was to help them. So that's what they did. It's also a choice to accept cruelty. It's easy to sit silently as your government passes laws that hurt, as long as they hurt someone else. It's easier to sit in a relationship than leave it and enter an unknown world. There may be worse dragons there. Cruelty should never be tolerable. Gandhi said he could think of dozens of causes worth dying for, but not a single one worth killing for. If someone is being cruel and doesn't know it, call them out. If someone is the victim of cruelty and doesn't seem to see it, call them out on it too. End it. As many of you know, I took a little time off this past autumn to work on the most important thing happening in the world. I've been wearing a button that came out of the Occupy movement. It's a simple image of a heart with the word Occupy written across it. People ask me what it means. I always respond with, "Occupy your heart. Live your compassion." At the core of it all for me is living your compassion. It shouldn't be that hard to look at others and think of them as being like you. That what is good for you is good for them. I'm not saying they should be just like you. I'm not saying they should want what you want. I'm saying they should get the same opportunities to fulfill their dreams, that they should be free from oppression and harm. When something is happening that causes someone pain, emotional or physical, ask yourself if it would be okay for that to happen to you. If not, then something needs to be changed. Change happens when we make it happen. Step up. Be nice. The Orb is a listener-supported presentation of Cornoble Productions. New podcasts are released alternate Mondays at orbcast.ca or pick us up at iTunes. I'm Reed Hart.